Some say there are too many, some say there are too few, but we do know this. There are now enough superhero movies in the world for Geek History Lesson to decide who are the best superhero movie actors of all time. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Spandex Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to Your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or list from popular culture and list everything you need to know about them in about an hour.
Is that a new thing you're doing this podcast? List?
Bits.
List.
I like
Bits.
It.
Wait, comedy?
Wait a minute. I hear a voice. That can only mean a certain thing. That
a list?
No, it's not. The list does not talk. Does the list? Hold on. List? See, the list doesn't talk. But somebody that does talk is our special guest. We have kidnapped him again. He has been here multiple times. You love him. He is the co-host of the Only Stupid Answers podcast, which comes out every Monday. And he is the co-writer of Hellbent Volume 1 and 2, which is on Kickstarter right now. I'm talking about the lovely, the effervescent DJ Woolridge. Hello, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. I love coming on the show so much.
Well, we love having you. That's, I think, it's the reason why we keep bringing you
Welcome
on.
To this episode on Hungarian composer Franz Liszt.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be great.
So, yes, we are going to tackle, everybody, a list, the top five superhero movie actors of all time. DJ, I want to ask you real quickly. I don't know about you. Mm. This was kind of a difficult list for me. Was this an easy list for you?
Kind of, because then you have, I think with all these things, you have to think about best. And it's like, okay, what does best mean to me? And then also, because you all have had me, I've been lucky enough to be on some of your list shows before. And I also try to think of stuff like, okay, what are some ones that maybe Jason and Ashley won't pick? That, you know what I mean? That I still think, because
that's
there's a couple.
DJ is a good guest.
Because there's a couple, there's two right off the top of my head, and we can talk about them in the after show or at the end of the episode, that were immediately like, well, that, I imagine all three of us are going to think of these two people in these two roles. But so I tried to think of like other ones that might not, that I believe are some of the best performances, but might not be what people initially think of.
That's interesting. Ashley, how about you? I found this to be kind of a difficult list to make. What about you?
I found this pretty difficult because I also didn't want it to only be white men.
Fair.
And unfortunately.
It's a bit of a hurdle.
Yeah.
It was. Isn't that so?
This comment's going out to that guy who gave us one star, who said we were too woke and then compared us to Christianity.
look, I will say this as a white man. I even tried this as well. Like, I was like, yeah, like I made my initial list and I was like, it is a very white male list.
Yeah. and unfortunately, that was a hard thing. The other thing I struggled with, and we didn't, was like, man, do we take Christopher Reeve off the table?
When I thought of the two names, I was like, well, we're all going to say Christopher Reeve Superman. We're just all going to.
Okay. We, listeners, obviously, Christopher Reeve is somewhere on this list. Obviously. That's there. I will say this too. There were two, possibly three people that I was like, oh, I think they're on all three of our lists. Now, it's interesting that DJ said two. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to have this crossover. I had that same thought. He's in here. We know he's in here, everybody.
Yeah.
But where he's in here is going to be very interesting. I also tried to go off the beaten path a little bit because I truly thought about, like DJ said, like, who are some of these performances that have really stuck out to me, who have really made and improved said superhero movie? So everybody out there, we just want to say the only rules we gave the participants for this list were it had to be live action and it had to be a movie. And it specifically had to be sort of in the superhero genre of movie. So some villains have snuck onto our list, I'm certain. Some supporting characters have snuck into our list. I'm very certain of that. Now, this list is our favorites. It's not the objective best. So just chill out. That's saying we forgot people. Go make your own list and send it to us on our socials. Ashley, where can they do that?
You can do that at GHL Podcast on Twitter, at Geek History Lesson on Instagram, and on Facebook.com/Geek History Lesson.
Well, I think without further ado, let's just get into these lists. Ashley, do you want to kick us off with your number five? Who do you think is the number fifth best superhero movie actor of all time?
My number five, I want to put a little caveat on the beginning.
Christopher Reeve
is the only reason he's not number one is because he's not playing a superhero.
Okay,
fair. But he is in the superhero universe. And that is our neighbor, J.K. Simmons, as J. Jonah Jameson in all of the Spider-Man movies, I guess.
Hey, wait, pause real quick. You said your neighbor. Elaborate on that.
We see him at the movie theater all the time.
No, you don't. Stop.
Yes,
it.
Multiple times. Yes.
I remember. I've been living out in Hollywood. Sorry, Ashley, not to derail.
No, you're fine. Floor. You're totally fine.
I've been living in Hollywood for a minute now. So you run into famous people. I used to work at place where you run into celebrities, and I don't get starstruck often. The only two times was one of them. I was leaving a coffee shop, and J.K. Simmons was there, and my brain shorted out. I was like, you know what I mean? Like, uh-huh. I don't know how to process that. You're in front of me right now. The other one was Grant Morrison. I was working at a Comic Con one time, and I had an opportunity to like say hey. And because
he's
a
lovely human person.
I understand, but I saw them and I couldn't, and because I don't normally get starstruck, I didn't know how to process, I didn't know how to like work through it. And so they just walked by and I was like, this is going to haunt me for the rest of my life. And it has.
Well, let's get back to J. Jonah. We've seen him at the movie theaters, we assume with his grandkids, several times.
Yeah, the first time we saw him was when Legend of Korra was on the air. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Tenzin! Mm-hmm.
but why J. Jonah Jameson, Ashley, is number five on your list?
Oh my gosh. So recently, Jason told me that you can Google J. Jonah Jameson, J.K. Simmons' initial audition mm-hmm. for J. Jonah Jameson, which I did. And it is wild because he's playing it like very straight-laced, very close to the vest. Like, this is a real person in NFX or an HBO show. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we went from that as the initial instinct to the absolute cartoon character portrayal that we get, and I mean that as a compliment.
100%.
In live action, I think just speaks to J.K. Simmons' like width and breadth as a performer. I think overall, he's fairly underrated as a performer.
I agree.
Incredible in everything. Literally the only reason to watch the movie Juno, J.K. Simmons. Allison Janney's pretty good in that, too.
Yeah.
But as J. Jonah Jameson, he managed to take a character that we know from the animated series and from the comic books, who is not a human person.
No.
Bring him to the screen in a way where he is absolutely a real grounded person that everybody who's ever worked in or adjacent to entertainment has worked for in a startup at some point in their lives.
Yep.
But is still recognizably a comic book level antagonist. I won't call him a villain because he's not a villain.
Antagonist.
But antagonist. Yeah. And if for no other reason than the influence on pop culture, like the meme content mm-hmm. that has come out of his work as J. Jonah Jameson since 2001 is still rife on the internet. You see the gif of him laughing all the time, used everywhere. You see the meme that's him going back and forth with Ted Raimi used all the time everywhere. And the fact that he still feels like a real grounded person in this role, like as an actor, there's so much that I admire about the way that this is translated to the screen. I think there's a reason why Marvel Studios went back to this well and said, yeah, we'll just shove him in our universe. Does he work there tonally? He will. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't be bothered. And Warner Brothers clearly looked to his popularity as a supporting character in this role when they cast him and utterly wasted him as Jim Gordon in mm-hmm. Justice League. But when I think about best superhero characters in live action, J.K. Simmons always comes to mind, to the point where I bought his action figure. So, and made an action figure.
Yeah,
there's a
desk,
Marvel
desk pounding action.
Legend
yeah.
of him.
There's a new Marvel legend. Yeah. There's two. He has two. J.K. Simmons has two action figures. Oh, hold on a second. People are going to be mad if I don't do this.
You don't get this.
That's right. Thank you.
Action figure spotlight.
Yes.
He has two action figures. They made one for Spider-Man 2, yep. And it had like desk pounding action. The desk broke. And then more recently, they made his bald version In the for Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yep.
Slightly less supportive of that version, just because I like the
doesn't look as
I
good.
Like the square top. I like the square top. Yeah. No, but actually, I want to co-sign your this being part of your top five love those Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, and I think J.K. Simmons is a perfect embodiment of what makes them work. In that it is 100% a very heightened, almost cartoonish reality, but it never forgets the emotional truth of these characters and J.K. Simmons' ability to navigate that to the point where, you know, he can have those back and forth with Ted Raimi. But when Green Goblin shows up and Green Goblin's like, tell me the photographer of who's taking pictures of Spider-Man, and J.J. lies and he's like, I don't know. He mails him in. You buy it. You're like, oh, yeah, this is the same guy. I 100% believe that. And I believe as heightened as this person is, I believe in him as a person.
I will also say Jason and I recently watched Spider-Man 3 because it was the anniversary of Spider-Man 3. And he is one of the only redeemable parts of that movie.
I will say he almost made my list as well. And you have to admire something that Kevin Feige and all the producers of Spider-Man, you know, the MCU adventures, thought to themselves, there's no way, there's no possible anything we can do that can beat this character. So let's just get the same. Let's just read.
And luckily,
like, make
he'll
it the same
literally
actor.
Be age appropriate for the rest of his life.
He will be. He will be. Yeah. Well, like, they were also, like,
and also talented enough that, like, yeah, the tones of these universes are different, but he's a strong enough performer that he can navigate that.
Exactly. Great choice. He almost made my list. DJ, who is your number five?
Okay, so we're going from like top to bottom. Is that the
going from number five to
number five?
One. Counting down.
Okay.
Casey Kasem.
Okay.
Voice
cool.
of Robin himself.
That's
a
reference
Kasem.
That only people over 50 get.
So here's one I'm going to do that I feel fairly confident is not going to be on either of your lists. I'm going to say Nicolas Cage as Johnny Blaze, specifically in Ghost Rider: Spirit of Vengeance. For everybody that saw the first Ghost Rider film and was like, ooh, gross, totally understand. But then if you did not go and see Spirit of Vengeance, you missed out, because this is a Ghost Rider film made by the directors of Crank, starring Nicolas Cage. This is a match made in heaven. And they all understood the assignment that this movie is going to be bonkers. This movie is going to be insane. And It is entirely worth it. Every Nick Cage-ism in this movie is entirely worth it. But specifically the scene where he's threatening a thug and talking about the ghostwriter scratching at the door. Oh, my God. Chef's kiss. Love it. And one of the reasons I love Nick Cage as an actor, especially when he's feeling it, when he's in the zone, is and similar, very different performers, but on a similar note as J.K. Simmons, as J. Jonah Jameson, this ability to do an incredibly, let's say, operatic performance or character, not something specifically tethered to our reality, but still finding a humanity there and still finding a truth in that, still expressing human feelings. Is it like my ideal ghostwriter? Maybe not, but I just really like what the Crank directors allowed Nicolas Cage to get away with in Ghost Rider: Spirit of Vengeance. And I believe, I'd have to double check this, I believe he also did a lot of the Ghost Rider scenes in mocap. And I think he brought something very interesting to, because we can be honest, the Ghost Rider character is not necessarily the most emotive. He has a skull for a head. And so he was able to, I think his performance was able to shine through even in those CG mocap moments, which is rare even today, even as superhero movies are even more mainstream. So dark horse contender, Nicolas Cage as Ghost Rider, as Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider, specifically in Ghost Rider: Spirit of Vengeance.
Is it Mark Steven Johnson, the director of that one?
That was the first Ghost Rider, which
you're talking about the second Ghost Rider.
I'm talking about the second Ghost Rider. The first Ghost Rider I cannot defend. I have not revisited. Mark Steven Johnson also did Daredevil, which is also very not good in my opinion. But Spirit of Vengeance, if anybody's who's seen the Crank movies and that brand of craziness, just the idea of them work. And then one of the directors, because there's two directors that made the Crank movies. One of those directors went on to do the sci-fi adaptation of Happy. And he also worked with Nicolas Cage again in Mom and Dad, which is another movie I cannot recommend enough. It is so good.
So basically it's the Crank directors and Nicolas Cage and you're in.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. I think if you give Nicolas Cage the right directors that are able to bring the most out of him, maybe not even that. Anybody who saw The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, the movie itself is not particularly good, in my opinion, but Nicolas Cage's performance in it entirely elevates the movie. And this is not necessarily the case with Spirit of Vengeance. Also, should be worth noting, Idris Elba has a supporting role in Spirit of Vengeance. That was one of the first times, because I saw that before I saw The Wire. It was one of the first times I was like, oh, that guy's a movie star. That guy's going to blow up. And lo and behold, he did.
Whatever happened to Idris Elba?
Where did he go? Right? Yeah, he
Marvel,
played Knuckles.
Marvel in it.
He played Knuckles. Yeah, that's
right. Knuckles.
I'm going to revoke an opinion from my Marvel Club review of the first Thor movie. Marvel, in a very racist decision, made him the only black Asgardian in the Dormandu Asgard.
He does run the elevator of Asgard.
He does.
But that's besides the point of this list.
I have to say, I've never seen any of the Ghost Rider movies, and DJ's the first human person to come along and make a case for it. So
Ghost
Rider Club, everybody?
Cannot stress this enough. Just Spirit of Vengeance. Not the first Ghost Rider, second Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider.
Our listeners might know this. DJ, I've never seen the second Ghost Rider, specifically because I saw the first Ghost Rider.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people fell into that trap. Yeah.
So Ghost Rider 2. Isn't Highlander's own Christopher Lambert in that movie?
Let me double check.
He's in that movie. And our listeners will know I'm a big Highlander fan, so maybe we are going to do Ghost Rider Spirits of Vengeance Club.
All right.
I just rewatched Highlander recently, and it is dope.
The reservation with this podcast.
All right. While everybody's doing a cursory Google search,
Are you Googling that, DJ? Please.
I'm on IMDb as we speak.
I think Christopher Lambert is in it.
I picked an obvious thing. DJ picked a wild thing. Jason, regale us with your number.
Christopher Lambert is in it. You are correct. Also, Ciarán Hinds, who from Snyder Cut fame.
Justice League fame.
Everyone's favorite villain, Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
From Game of Thrones fame.
He basically plays the devil, Mephisto, in that movie. And he's great in that. Anyway.
I'm just going to give myself some applause for that. Pulling out those Highlander references. Okay, so my number five is probably going to make a lot of people mad. I do love that we all chose interesting choices for number five, because my number five also comes from the Sam Raimi Spider-Verses, but it's an actress that I think does not get enough do, because when you think about Spider-Man, you think about his emotional heart. His emotional heart is Aunt May, and Aunt May is played beautifully by Rosemary Harris in Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3.
I was going to ask, I was like, is this Miss Rosemary?
It is Miss Rosemary Harris, because Aunt May in those three films, in each film, gets a show-stopping scene.
She also literally brings the energy walking off the comic book panel.
She is comic books Aunt May brought to life. And that is the reason why she edged out J. Jonah Jameson to me.
Yeah.
Because I guess I'm an old softie.
Yeah, you went for the sweetheart and I went for the yuck yucks.
She's an English actress, so she's doing a dialect, which is
so
amazing. Her Aunt May voice is so great.
It's very mid-Atlantic. It's very like Catherine Hepburn.
It is, but she gets a grace to the character. You can feel how much she mourns for her husband, how much she worries for her nephew. It's Sam Raimi's films never had a moment really where Aunt May and Peter like mutually acknowledge that he is Spider-Man, but you always get the impression from Spider-Man 2 on that she knows, that she specifically knows he's Spider-Man. And it all coalesces to me in two beautiful scenes in those films. One of the greatest scenes I think in all superhero movies is in Spider-Man 2, and it's Peter Parker's birthday party, and everybody is gone, and Harry is gone, and Mary Jane is gone, and there is Peter, and Aunt May has fallen asleep, and he wakes her up, and she gives him her gift, and her gift was a $20 bill, which he knows that she cannot afford, and he tries to give it back to her, and she will not take it. But then the most beautiful scene, I think, is one of the greatest scenes in all of superhero movies. Again, she gets two great scenes in Spider-Man 2, is the garage sale scene. And in the entire scene, is Aunt May is packing up the house because she's going to move out of the Queen's house, and Peter shows up and has a little next door neighbor boy helping out. And Peter is very unsure at this moment about being Spider-Man. And she is the one that basically convinces him to go back and be Spider-Man. And she says this amazing speech that Rosemary Harris, I think, knocks out of the park. And she goes, "I believe there's a hero in all of us that keeps us honest, gives us strength, makes us noble, finally allows us to die with pride. Even though sometimes we have to be steady and give up the thing we want the most, even our dreams. Spider-Man did that for Henry, and he wonders where he's gone. He needs him." And that speech only works because of Rosemary Harris and the great performance she gives. I think without Rosemary Harris, those movies, it's so funny. I always knew those movies were good. I always knew those movies were beloved, but it kind of took till Spider-Man No Way Home to really like impart on me how much for a generation people like Spider-Man the movie and Spider-Man 2, I think, were the Superman the movie of the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really do. Totally. I think they popped more than the X-Men movies. Because even now, 20 years later, we are still talking about this trilogy. Yeah. To this day.
Totally. I totally agree with you. And it's interesting you bring up Homecoming, because I think that's one of the things that it was kind of a disappointment with the for all the things that were exciting about the MCU Spider-Man movies. It felt like they didn't understand what May means to Peter and more importantly, what May means to a Spider-Man story. Because I would even argue that as for all its flaws, and there are many flaws in Spider-Man 3. It's once again a scene with May when she's talking about, you know, Peter says he's going to propose to MJ, mm-hmm. and May gives this monologue fundamentally about Ben proposing to her and what it means to the sacrifice it is to be married to somebody and be in a relationship basically, and that lays out the emotional stakes of the movie. And it's scenes like that it's like, I'm just bummed that superhero movies don't really, specifically Marvel movies, don't have room for anymore.
It's so funny, DJ. We were just talking about this recently because we just did a video retrospective of Thor 2011. Mm-hmm. And it's that same thing you just talked about, that they stop a Spider-Man, which is an action movie, to have this very emotional scene. And Thor 2011 does that too. And it, you know, that's a movie made pre-Disney, mm-hmm. Disney getting control of the Marvel universe. And you are correct. Like, the movies now, it's so interesting that they don't have the time to stop and give us these just heart lifting and fulfilling and just very emotional scenes. And again, Rosemary Harris got two or three of those scenes in every one of these movies. And that's the reason why she's my number five. She's
love it.
Doesn't get her due, and she definitely deserves it. Best Aunt May. No, and I'm going to say this. I think Sally Fields is a really excellent Aunt May too. Mm-hmm. And Rosemary Harris blows her out of the water. Yeah. And Oscar winner is Sally Fields.
Yeah, and Sally Field also gets, I would argue, one of the best moments of those two movies as well. But you're right, Rosemary Harris, it's like, well, it's not against Sally Field. It's just,
yeah,
it's just Rosemary not even a competition. Harris,
you cannot, again, just like J. Jonah Jameson, walks off the comic page. So that's why she's my number five.
Nice.
Ashley.
Yeah.
Who's your number four?
My number four, I had it my number one for a long time.
Christopher Reeve.
But I might just take him off my list out of spite. But he's only in one movie.
Okay.
And so everyone else on my list has been in multiple movies.
Oh, interesting.
And I kind of feel like it's when you have just started a comic book run or just seen a new movie and you know it's going to be your favorite thing, or it might be your favorite thing but hasn't germinated enough yet. Mm-hmm. So in my number four position, I have ist Kurt Wagner, the incredible Nightcrawler, Alan Cumming. There has been no other actor to play Nightcrawler. I won't stand for it.
Oh, wow. Putting down the foot and the foot down on that one.
I will die on that hill because there's been one Nightcrawler, and it is Alan Cumming in X2. And first of all, we talked about this on our Best Superhero Fights episode. The Nightcrawler breaking into the White House sequence is amazing and frightening. And Alan Cumming does a lot of the work. Alan Cumming also has to be under a ton of makeup and so prosthetic makeup. Teeth and do an accent
and
be comprehensible.
And have a tail.
and have a tail, which is a big ask even today. Now we're in the world where Mystique is all CGI because mm-hmm. another actor couldn't be bothered to be painted blue. Mm-hmm. So he has a lot to contend with before we even get to the writing of this character, the version of this character in the movie, and the emotional depth that has to be shown us in ultimately what's probably about a half an hour of screen time total.
Yeah, probably.
Because he's very much the B plot mm-hmm. of X2, and he's incredible. Like it's right there in the name. When you look at the impact of this character in larger pop culture, of everyone who's ever been in the X-Men franchise, which is like 85 movies deep at this point, he is always the casting choice that people want to see brought back. Mm-hmm. And as someone who is a deep Nightcrawler, he's my fan. He's my favorite X person. And I do a terrible impression of him here on the show. Minus the fact that he's not fuzzy, Alan Cumming mm-hmm. brings all the dignity and sadness and depth that I love about this character to the screen under a pound of makeup where he feels like a real person. At no point does he feel like, you know, some of the vibes that X-Men First Class throws around, like he's just at the mercy of the gorilla mask that they have put that poor actor under. He always feels real and grounded, which is quite an accomplishment, I feel.
And I think that's due to Alan Cumming. I think that's all Alan Cumming.
I think it is too, because I think there's other people in the X-Men franchise who were in the first two installments who are only wearing wigs who don't come across mm-hmm. as real a person as he does. And he also has to play possessed, which is incredibly hard to do. And he has to play the weight of the guilt and then the weight of the Catholic guilt that this character is known for. Like we have to see Matt Murdock actors mm-hmm. take on as well. I love that we meet him in a church or that we don't meet him in a church, but that Storm and Jean meet him in a church mm-hmm. and that
the X-Men meet him for the first time in a church.
He also manages to, he takes all of the religious references and it doesn't get weird because religion in science fiction can be really strange sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate his deft handling of that as well. He's honestly like Alan Cumming as Nightcrawler, I think is one of the most genius casting choices of all time. And he gets enough screen time to warrant it. Like I couldn't in good conscience put Kelsey Grammer's Beast on my list because.
Although I think it's an interesting fight between like which one do people prefer in those movies? Because I would argue that Kelsey Grammer in not my list, Kelsey Grammer's Beast also deserves to be, you know, like in high consideration.
I think he definitely deserves to be in the conversation. He's not as well served by the movie. Like exactly. Alan Cumming is in a much better movie and the character has much better writing on him, which helps. I also struggled putting him on my list because of the implications that we know about Bryan Singer.
I still think it's a fantastic choice. I would have never considered it. Well done.
Yeah, so he was at my number one, but he's only in one movie and then refused to come back. So I moved him down to number four. Alan Cumming as Nightcrawler.
And just to an earlier point you made, we need to pour one out for all the poor CG artists out there. It's like everybody on set that doesn't want to do their job. It's now like, well, just do it in a computer. And it's like, yeah, that's a lot. Somebody's going to have to do that.
That's a lot of rotoscoping.
There's a lot of VFX that already have to go into stuff like that. I really feel like as the performer, you can, you know, give up four more hours of your day or some more time and wear the freaking costume.
Mm-hmm. DJ, what is your number four?
Okay. My number four is I got to go to the one that arguably started at least the boom of the superhero boom that we're in now. And I got to go with Wesley Snipes as Blade. I believe it was Ryan Reynolds who said in Blade Trinity that he never met Wesley Snipes. He met Blade. And that's because and Wesley Snipes is Blade. He embodies, I think everybody's association with Blade, at least mine, and I might be projecting, but before those movies was off an appearance on Spider-Man the Animated Series. Like he was basically in a whole generation's brain, a Spider-Man supporting character. And I can't curse on this podcast, but Wesley Snipes made Blade the coolest MF-er to ever exist. Like I've gone back and I never seen Blade Trinity because of obvious from what I've heard from everybody.
When you go
and watch those first two Blade movies, you're like, Blade's so cool. And I think that is the bridge between stuff like Matrix and to what we have now with superhero movies that showed studios that like even somebody like Blade, who's not necessarily as high a marquee a character, can bring in the box office bucks. And I think a big part of that is Wesley Snipes And again, I guess this is something I'm going to come back to a few times, but his ability to not only be cool, not only be able to do the stunts, not only seem so badass, but at least in those first two movies, allow enough humanity in there because that's what connects you to the character. It's not the quips. It's not the action stuff. That's all stuff that we all enjoy, but you need to connect with these characters on a human level to develop that attachment. And I think he, in those first two movies, balanced it really well. And I think in a large part, you know, I think Spider-Man movies obviously catapulted that into the stratosphere. The X-Men movies played their part. But I think we owe a lot to those Blade movies and specifically Wesley Snipes.
I think that's an excellent choice.
I agree with like the overall impact on superhero movies because everyone, it's much easier to point to X-Men or Spider-Man, but Blade really is the thing that kicks it off. And then Wesley Snipes also laying the groundwork for hopefully a really incredible new Blade to come out.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Of course we got Mahershala Ali coming and he's an incredible actor. And I also think of, you think about the other action stars from Wesley Snipes' generation. I don't know that anybody could launch a superhero movie in the same way he was able
what,
to.
You're not a fan of Sylvester Stallone's Judge Dredd, DJ?
Well, look, there's three more spots on his list, so we'll see.
Exactly. Hold on a second.
Liam Neeson's Darkman?
Oh. Wait, does Darkman
count?
Damon
Wayans' Hold on. Blank Man?
Time out real quick. Does Darkman count?
Yes, of course it counts.
I need to redo my list.
Okay, then I think we need to see Jason's number four to see if it's going to be Darkman.
Yes. No, but it is going to be dark. It's going to be a villain. Just like Ashley earlier said that J. Jonah Jameson was a person we were talking about, that he was so good that the MCU could not recast him. I am talking about a villain that the MCU decided we cannot possibly beat this actor's performance. So much so that when this conversation happened, that this actor is the entire reason why Spider-Man No Way Home became a multiverser adventure, because the original plans for Spider-Man No Way Home was for Peter to fight Dr. Octopus. And when they were thinking about this movie, Kevin Feige has said in several interviews that he said, there's no possible way we can cast an actor that can do Doc Ock better than my number four, Alfred Molina, as Dr. Otto Octavius.
Should have put Catherine Hahn in real life, you cowards.
Oh, yeah, that would have been great. Anyways,
she was already Agatha, I get it.
That's a Spider-Verse reference. That would have been a great choice.
Hashtag HanCon 2022.
But let's talk about British actor Alfred Molina. Of course, you know, before Spider-Man 2, he's very famous for Satipo and Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, he was the villain in the Dudley Do-Right films. But I really think he didn't become mainstream known until Spider-Man 2 when he played Dr. Octopus, because they made him generally sympathetic and they gave him this very interesting relationship with Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker. Because the first movie we had Willem Dafoe, and Willem Dafoe is just straight out bonkers. Dr. Otto Octavius, this is the film that made Otto Octavius sympathetic, because before then he was very dastardly. He was very like, bah, humbug, kill Peter Parker. And
with that bowl cut securely in place.
Exactly. And that would create a lot of problems, I think, in your life. Mm-hmm. That bad haircut. But they established this very life lesson-y professor character that was always doting on his wife, who was, you know, Donna Murphy, by the way. And there was a true simpatico connection with Alfred Molina and his wife. You kind of understood Doc Ock in that movie. And you kind of understood, because of Alfred Molina's performance, oh, this is where Peter Parker could go wrong. Alfred Molina, I think, is a big reason why Spider-Man 2 is so beloved. Because he's just this sympathetic human villain that loves poetry and his wife, and he does the right thing. There's a reason why in the MCU No Way Home trailer, the first villain they revealed was Alfred Molina, because they knew people would have a just insane reaction to seeing him. And they did. That trailer was like the most viewed. It might be the most viewed movie trailer of still on YouTube to this day. Just that ending that trailer with "Hello, Peter." It's the performance that made Alfred Molina a household name. It's the performance that made Dr. Octopus a household name. I think people know Dr. Octopus now because of Alfred
Molina.
You're
not crediting that Burger King toy enough.
There's a Burger King toy?
Yeah, we've talked about it on this podcast like 100 times.
I'm sorry. And I also think that, you know, you Ashley and I have talked several times on this podcast about how we believe that Dr. Octopus is truly Spider-Man's quote unquote Joker. Like, he is the number one villain. And I think this movie and Alfred Molina's performance is a big reason. I don't think you can see the character nowadays. I've even heard certain comic pundits say there's the very famous storyline Superior Spider-Man where Otto becomes Peter Parker for a while.
For years.
I've heard many comic pundits say that they don't think that story would have even happened without Alfred Molina's performance in Spider-Man 2. And I believe that. So that's why he's my number four. He is, I know some people are shouting out there, I think he's the best villain performance in any superhero movie.
Wow.
It's Alfred Molina.
Wow.
Someone's coming. Someone who loves Heath Ledger is coming to throw hands.
Look, I'm just going to say this right now. I think Heath Ledger deserves to be in contention. He is not on my list.
Well, you know what? Maybe that's a different podcast that we'll do someday.
There you go.
Best villains.
There you go.
Great choice. I mean, Alfred Molina, next level excellence.
Yes. Luckily, we have him on the phone right now. Alfred, hello. Man. No, we don't.
Also, shout out. If anybody's watched Jim Jarmusch's a short anthology, Coffee and Cigarettes, Alfred Molina has an amazing bit with Steve Coogan.
Steve Coogan, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
I also want to point out, by the way, that Alfred Molina has done a lot of voice work. And in that voice work, he has played Lex Luthor multiple times.
Amazing.
He's also played my very favorite painter on stage.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, he played Mark Rothko in Red.
That's true. Ashley, let's get to your numero tres. Who is your number three best superhero movie actor of all time?
My numero trois is, man, she just keeps showing up and I just keep getting happier every time she shows up.
Christopher Reeve?
Absolutely. I told you I'm taking him out of my list out of spite. It's Hayley Atwell as Agent Peggy Carter, because one, she is so much better than the MCU deserves. She's so good. She shows up and reprises this character in thankless parts. They give her a TV show, rip her budget away, and get it canceled for nonsense by setting it in Los Angeles. And she says, that's okay. I'll come back and be Peggy Carter again. They kill her in like two different movies. And she goes, that's okay. I'll come back and be Peggy Carter again. They finally made her Captain Britain and wasted her. And she says, that's okay. I'll come back and be Peggy Carter again. Because one, she's a genius. And two, she's just a phenomenal actor. Even if the only movie Peggy Carter had ever showed up in was The First Avenger, she is one of the best parts about The First Avenger, and like really established herself for a long time as, alongside Black Widow, the most important female character in the MCU. I would say, depending on the view that you take of Natasha, she's arguably more important in the MCU in everything that she's done and everything that she's touched. I think the fact that she's been brought back over and over and over again, and every time she shows up again, everyone in the movie theater goes and like loses their mind, especially when you kill her for literally no reason and waste putting her in a costume. She brings a grace and a dignity to this character that you would expect of somebody having to stand up against World War II levels of misogyny. And I think that's what makes her so likable, because they keep her soft and kind, even amidst her more brash actions. She is in every way Steve's equal. Her Steve's goodness is reflected in this version of Peggy Carter. So, and her impact on the character and the impact on larger pop culture is so important that Marvel basically undid Steve's romance with Agent 13 in favor of Steve's romance with Peggy. They still kind of dip back into Agent 13 because the timeline is a little bit messier.
You can tell they were considering it.
But there was just more between Chris Evans and Hayley Atwell. And I can say, as an audience member, you know, having watched her show and loved her show, it was like, yeah, I want to see. And that's one of the, when people get kind of up in arms about the notion that that is the Peggy Carter from our universe, that like Steve literally, and it's like, as somebody that watched and loved that show, I was like, no, that's what I want, though. I want her to be happy.
Yes. And she's one of the few characters I think we're going to talk about who actually gets a happy ending, because we know that her and Steve end up together. And I kind of like the idea in my head canon, she's the one who goes to work and he has to stay home and be a house husband because he's one of the most, he's famous.
Yeah.
Or maybe he draws the comic strips.
He cooks.
Yeah.
He cooks.
You think he can cook? You think Steve can
100%.
Cook?
100%. You know, actually, this is such a great choice. And I will say that Peggy Carter almost made my list.
Yeah.
Almost made my list, because you are exactly correct. This is a character, this is an actress that infused so much into this character that she has become electric, and we do cheer every, it is to this day, and I agree with these people. You hear people saying they should have just gave Agent Carter her own movie. And I agree. Yeah. I agree.
They should have.
And even with the sort of like rebranding of her as Captain Carter, I would even say, give her a movie. Yes. Yeah. I want to see that movie.
I would
movie.
Watch a Captain Carter movie. Yes. Absolutely. The timeline, the MCU timeline doesn't make sense. Just give it to me.
This is why she's such a great choice for this list, because this just shows you what a powerful actor can do when given the right material, because she took a nothing part, which could have been
part,
a nothing B character site. We've seen him in a million movies. And when you get the right actor in this role, like Hayley Atwell, it becomes magic.
She also, I think, carries that into her real life as well. Like, I met her once in the breakfast buffet line at the Marriott at San Diego Comic-Con, and she's a really lovely person.
She's lovely. So. Great choice.
Hayley Atwell.
Awesome. DJ, who's your number three?
We've been dipping a lot into the Raimi Spider-Man movies. Mm-hmm. And so I want to go with another dark horse to
Christopher
Reeve. I did not take him off my list out of spite, but he is not on my list because, again, I assumed he would pop up someplace else.
He is on my list.
Yeah. I figured it was on somebody's list. So I was like, that's going to be covered. But when you talk about somebody, we talked about, Ashley talked about Alan Cumming and Hayley Atwell, both incredible actors in either movies or parts that were kind of like, you know, they didn't get as much time to shine, but they did incredible work with what they got. I want to shout out Andrew Garfield, mm-hmm. who I think might be the best Peter Parker performance in arguably the worst Spider-Man movies. I think his Peter Parker, specifically when you get to Amazing Spider-Man 2 and what he's able to do when he runs into that little kid that's dressed like Spider-Man, or when he's trying to reach out to Jamie Foxx as Max, there's a real empathy to his Peter that I think was showcased even more in No Way Home, when he's interacting with the other Peters, and how he's more of an open nerve, hard on a sleeve type Peter Parker. And I think the reason anybody has any sort of nostalgia for those movies is specifically him. And I think if I were him, I would be very grateful for No Way Home, because it was an opportunity for him and to a lesser extent, like Jamie Foxx, to be like, hey, for all the faults those movies had, we weren't the problem. we were not the problem in those movies. And so I think, as much as I love Tom Holland, I think he's a great pick. And Tobey Maguire will always be my live action Spider-Man, because the Sam Raimi movies are my go. I've watched them more than probably any other movie ever made. I think Andrew Garfield might be the best of the three of them, despite me not preferring his movies. And when they talk about, like, well, maybe he'll be the Spider-Man in the Venomverse, it's like, sure, do it. He'll make those movies better. Whatever you're trying to do over there, he'll make those movies better.
I think he is inarguably the best actor to ever play Peter Parker, full stop, period.
Yeah, in terms of just raw talent, I think there's no doubt that Andrew Garfield is the best of the three.
And I think he also benefits from, of the three, it comes across that he cares the most about it. Like the other ones, it's like, this is a cool job that I either got to do or I am currently doing. Andrew Garfield clearly loves the character, and it means a lot to him.
Remember when he was Spider-Man on Hollywood Boulevard?
Yes. Yeah. Very funny sketch. Yes.
That's the best thing I think that's come out of No Way Home, is the Andrew Garfield apology tour. It's everyone being like, you know what? We actually love you. Like, sorry. We threw
rocks at you for years.
Any kind of low-key steals a good chunk of that movie from the other characters when he gets MJ save.
Yes.
When he gets the MJ save. Like a lot of when he, the moment where he's like, oh man, I suck. And they're like, hey man, you don't suck. Like, it's okay.
No,
you're
amazing.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, but did anyone else, when he was like, I love you guys, did anybody else flash to Spider-Verse where Jeff was like, you got to say it back? Nobody says it back to him.
Nobody says it back.
Well, the funniest thing about it, as I've heard, is that I love you was a complete improv.
Well, that shows you how emotionally stunted the other two actors are, that they couldn't say I love you to another man.
Fair.
Let me just drag them through.
But I do also think that it fits with their performances, because I think Andrew Garfield's Peter is a most emotionally open, which is also what made, like, he's also of the three, the one that's actually been through the most. Like, he's and I think it's because for the show we do on our Patreon, Almost Stupid Answer Patreon, Spider-Verse, you had to go back and revisit those movies, and I was not looking forward to it. And I will, all honesty, Amazing Spider-Man 1 is tough to get through, but Amazing Spider-Man 2, there are some things that you can recommend from that movie, but specifically Andrew Garfield's performance. I just think it's like there's that sequence where it's a montage and he gets the cold. And it's like, oh yeah, this is Spider-Man. Like, this is the guy. It almost makes you wish that they had been able to figure out a way, as good as Tom Holland is, that like Andrew Garfield Spider-Man had gotten to segue into the MCU.
They could have done it because with J. Jonah Jameson, it just shows you that you just have to kind of be like, yeah, whatever. This Peter Parker in this universe looks exactly like the Peter Parker from a previous universe.
But also, like, not to dive too far down this rabbit hole, but we all remember when the Sony email leaks came out. Like, they are obsessed with Peter Parker being a young white guy in high school.
Yeah,
school. And for my money, Peter Parker's more interesting as like a 40-year-old married dad.
I think one of my favorite adaptations of Peter Parker is in Spider-Verse, or at least unsurprisingly.
I love Peter B. Parker.
Yeah, the one I relate to most because I also am tired and kind of over it. And so it's like, yeah, I relate to this Peter a lot.
Also, if you do the math, that Peter B. Parker is 36 years old. Okay, mm-hmm. Jason, what's your number three?
Somebody that I also think might be 36 years old. I don't know.
No, I just think that's a depressing thought, so I wanted to smash past it. Yeah.
So I am going to, my number three is, I think, the actor that makes the MCU works. Now, a lot of people are going to expect me to say Robert Downey Jr. And I think that is a great performance. He is not my number three choice. People were also, I think, would maybe consider that Chris Hemsworth as Thor deserves to be in the spot. No, that is not my number three choice. My number three choice is who I think is actually the heart of the MCU and the person that makes the MCU work, and that is Chris Evans as Captain America.
Yeah.
He appears in 11 films, and this is a character, Captain America, for years on paper, just doesn't really work. It's the reason why Captain America went out of vogue in the 90s, because people really couldn't understand how a World War II soldier was pretty lame and really wouldn't kill people and didn't talk about the war. And
look, as a non-American, I was like, I can't believe you're trying to sell me on Captain America.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you?
Exactly. And there were two things that happened in Captain America's, you know, history that changed Captain America and it has basically made him a great character. The two things are the Ultimates run by Mark Miller, who that run truly embraced that this was a guy that went through a war and would have carried a gun and shot people.
Yep.
He's a soldier. And then it was Chris Evans. Mm-hmm. And I think Chris Evans was the first in his performance. Because again, Captain America is just like Agent Carter on paper. And I've read that script. The character, you understand his Clark Kentness of it all. Yes. Like,
that's their love child.
Mm-hmm. It is, of course. Super Soldier. We saw it in Malcolm Comics.
Malcolm Comics. That's totally on topic, but I love Amalgam Comics.
I want a Super Soldier Amalgam Comics. Hold on here. The audience is going to get so mad at me if I don't do this. Action figure dream spotlight. Yeah. I really want a Super Soldier action figure from Amalgam Comics. But that is beside the point.
Do a whole, I don't know how you could possibly do it, but do a whole, Spider Boy 100%.
Iron Lantern.
Disney's lawyers are rolling in their graves right now. Yes, they're dead because they're zombies. Going on.
Yes.
Chris Evans. Chris Evans brings the heart to this character and explains, I think, in such a succinct way with his performance to the audience that this could have been a man that could carry a gun and could kill people. But because of the war and the choices he had to make in the war, he took a left turn and decided never to take a life ever again.
Yeah.
I understand that with Chris Evans. He makes the Boy Scout work, and we see his complete journey more so than any other Avenger, because one of my complaints of Robert Downey Jr. in the MCU is, and it's the reason why I love Iron Man 1, is in Iron Man 1, the lesson of Iron Man 1 is that Tony Stark is no longer a dick.
Yeah.
And then immediately in Iron Man 2, they decided, well, if he's not a dick anymore, then he can't be fun. No, he's a dick again.
Mm-hmm. And then they make him the best villain of the entire MCU.
and then he carries on for another 11 movies, kind of being an ass. So to me, I'm like, oh, he completely unlearned the lesson that he learned in Iron Man 1. Whereas Captain America, you see him go from, oh, I trust the government. No, I don't trust the government. Oh, I should be my own man. No, I should be part of a team. No, I've been Captain America for too long. I should probably have a life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you learn that lesson. And they gave him the happy ending at the end of his career with this character, with Chris Evans, because they knew that they couldn't kill him.
If they
killed Chris Evans, the entire audience would have revolted against this movie.
Yeah.
And it might have killed the MCU completely, full stop. But they gave him the happy ending because they knew we needed it. And it's because of Chris Evans that we wanted that. And he carried the MCU. He took the goofiest character that would not have worked, and he made it work. And it's the reason why we are still fascinated with Chris Evans to this day. He is memeified.
Yeah.
Even now, talking about Lightyear, people are going crazy. It's because of Chris Evans as Captain America that we have this relationship with him. Yeah. That's why he's my number three.
I also never would have thought that that dude from Scott Pilgrim would have been a good Captain America.
Oh, for real? I didn't even bring that up. When he was first cast, everybody said Johnny Storm from the Fantastic Four, and he completely killed every naysayer.
He understood the assignment.
Yes.
100%, because before that, yeah. When you think of Scott Pilgrim, you bring up Human Torch, you think Cellular, which I think is the first movie I saw him in. It's
DJ.
Yeah, he kind of had this this jerk thing going on, which he revisited with Knives Out. And
then from The Losers.
Yeah, and so a complete...
Oh my God, how many comic book characters does he play?
A bunch. But yeah, complete 180. And he has probably still to this day one of my favorite scenes in the MCU, which is I think the best parts of the first Captain America movie are pre-Super Soldier Serum. And one of those is when Tommy Lee Jones throws the fake grenade and he immediately throws himself on it. And I don't know about everybody else, but for me, that's what sold me. I'm like, oh yeah, Captain America.
Exactly.
And I think to your point, Jason, I think the other thing is I really like it. And another actor I thought about putting on this list was Robbie Downey Jr. because he elevates. There's a reason Iron Man movies do so well and Iron Man comics don't. And it's because of Robert Downey Jr. but I think the one problem with that performance is the MCU looked at that and was like, well, that's all our guys now. All our guys are.
I agree. And DJ, it is interesting. And I think it all comes down to personal preference. You either like. In the MCU, you either like Iron Man or you like Captain America more. And I think it tells you the exact split. There is a civil war, I think, in the fandoms too.
But I do think because Cap is allowed to be sincere, the only other off the top of my head, I think the only other character that is kind of allowed to be that is Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther, allowed to be kind of a sincere, not just a joke machine, and maybe a little bit Tom Holland Spider-Man, because even though he does jokes, it's from a different place than Tony Stark. So it's kind of it kind of puts Chris Evans out on an island, but he's done incredible work there.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of incredible work, thank you for that segue, DJ. You have a comic book that is on Kickstarter right now. It's called Hellbent. I've read volume one. I thought it was excellent. I'm excited for volume two. Please tell our listeners about it, where they can find it, why it's so awesome. And how it will capture their heart, like Chris Evans captured all our hearts.
HellbentComicBook.com is where you can go to check it out. It is part two of our Hellbent saga. If you're not like Jason and you didn't get a chance to read volume one, don't worry. There's also tiers where you can get volumes one and two. And basically, this continues the journeys of our two main characters, Jezzy and Nick. Jezzy is a young trans woman with incredible supernatural abilities. And Nick is an arcane assassin. He works for a secret society hunting monsters and stuff. And he is charged with defending Jezzy and keeping her away from the machinations and the acolytes of her father, who is the devil. And I co-wrote this with my good friend Jana July. We have an incredible art team with Heather Vaughn as our main interior artist, but we have a lot of guest artists stopping by, because one thing that is important with Hellbent that was always important to Jane and I as we were conceiving it is we wanted a diverse cast of characters, and it was important to us to get a diverse group of creators to contribute to that. So not only is Heather in there, but we also have Kaylee Rowena, we have Kayla Felty, Cam White, Robin Tess, a whole team of amazing people. Go to hellbentcomicbook.com. You can check it out. But I'll say, if you're into kind of more supernatural thrillers like Something is Killing the Children or Preacher or Sandman, you will enjoy Hellbent.
I also want to give a shout out because super best friend editor Brittany Matter. Yes. He's also editing Hellbent. So like there's a super best friend connection, everybody. So go check that out. What's the URL again, DJ?
HellbentComicBook.com. We've already reached our initial funding goal, which is so great. We're working on our second stretch goal. As of this recording, we're working on our second stretch goal. So we hit our first stretch goal, which was more pages. Our 44-page comic is now a 48-page comic. Our second stretch goal, every physical tier comes with a sticker, which is our Hellbent seal. That sticker, if we hit our second stretch goal, will be a glow-in-the-dark sticker. So when we were looking at stickers, that's something I really wanted to do. And so help us reach that stretch goal so you can get a glow-in-the-dark sticker, which is awesome.
That is cool. That is really, really cool. Go check it out, everybody. All right, Ashley.
Yeah.
We're in the top two. Who is your number two best superhero movie actor of all time?
Well, I would like to thank DJ for evoking his name and putting some nice words on it. And that is Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa / Black Panther. For two main reasons that can be categorized similarly, and it is for overcoming incredible circumstances.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say too much about Chadwick Boseman's personal life because I think we all know how it ended, and we all have only the smallest idea of what he went through personally while he was taking on this role. He didn't have to do that from an artistic standpoint. He certainly didn't have to do it in private, but I have a great admiration for his dedication to this character and to his work and to leaving this kind of legacy for other creators in the world. But also overcoming all the obstacles to make the Black Panther movie work in the MCU in this time and under the auspices of things like major motion pictures studios. Black Panther could so easily have not worked. It could have so easily felt like pandering, or it could have so easily felt racist. And it doesn't feel any of those things. A lot of that, of course, is at the feet of Ryan Coogler, the director, producer, writer, king of Wakanda in real life.
That's fair.
who ushered in like so many other positive things about it. But I heard this statement once from a terrible director, but it's a great piece of advice. The job of a leading actor is to lead. And I think actors like Chadwick Boseman understand that. And I think he set such a high standard. And that is the reason why all the other performances across the Wakandan, I almost said diaspora, but that's definitely not what I said, across the Wakandan cast really stand out above the rest. There's no weak moment in Black Panther. It's a stunning movie, and it is led by his performance as established in Avengers continuity because he built out the accent. He attributed certain aspects that had to be expanded on when we were looking at Wakanda as a whole. And that is something that's so incredible. And it's such a responsibility that is like not for an actor to have to do. That is something that consultants are supposed to do. And then on top of that, he's fun. He's funny. He's likable. And he did a ton of the fight work. When you are looking for like excellence in superhero performances, if Chadwick Boseman isn't in the conversation, I don't even know what you're doing.
I agree. One thing he did that a lot of actors have a lot of trouble with is he always seemed very regal.
Yes, yeah. He seems like a prince or a king. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And also an actor who I never met him personally, but from everything that I have heard, understood the importance of being Black Panther on and off the screen.
He seems like a very nice guy. Yeah. When, I mean, again, we talked about how people cheer when Haley Atwell and Chris Evans and certain actors. I mean, I don't think we would have seen the outpouring of love when he passed away if people didn't love this performance.
Well, think about the what if T'Challa became Star-Lord, his last MCU
still
performance.
One of my favorite Marvel things ever.
It was solid.
Yeah. And he's great in it, and the resounding response to it on social media tells you all that you need to know about his impact as this character.
Yeah, and I know they had plans originally that was going to be the spinoff of What If before his death.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they apparently, like, everybody inside the Marvel building loved that episode so much that they were like, we're just going to make this a cartoon. And apparently Chadwick was on board.
Well, that is one of the options where, look, I don't want to wade into the debate of just recast him.
Of course.
But that would be a great option where you hire a sound alike.
Yes. Yeah.
I knew he was going to be near the top of my list.
Yeah. And you're right, Ashley, because of the groundwork that he and John Connie as King T'Chaka laid in Civil War. you know, we've seen a lot of these characters bounce from movie to movie, and it's never quite, it's always a little different, you know, each time, like, and so seeing the groundwork they laid, he laid with that character was so solid that when we segue into Black Panther or even bringing up What If, which is a completely different scenario, it all feels of a piece. The version of T'Challa in What If has such different circumstances than the mainstream T'Challa, but it still feels like I totally believe that this character, this is the same character just in a different circumstance.
You know what I totally believe? I believe it's time to learn what DJ's number two is.
So for me, and we talked a little bit about this ahead of time, and before the show, I was on the fence about it, but now I think it's a good time to bring it up. Is I want to bring up Carl Urban as Judge Dredd from the film Dredd. If you've not seen Dredd, do that. It's very good. It is very good.
Yes. It's amazing. It has Rob Schneider in it. There's a lot of Taco Bell
Different Dredd. Different. What? That's a different Dredd. I'm talking about. Sorry about that.
Talk about the Olivia Thirlby vehicle.
Yeah. Well, and that's
where Armand Asante is the villain, and Max von Sydow is a judge that walks through the debt. That's
no.
We're
Max
about.
Von Sydow just wants to see the baby, please.
That's the wrong guy.
This is a film that is ostensibly directed by Pete Travis, but the word on the street is this is essentially Alex Garland's first film.
I have heard that as well. Yeah.
But so you're like, DJ, is this just you an excuse for you to talk about Dredd? Probably. But the thing I do want to bring up, and I think people underestimate how difficult it is to play a good hard ass. There's a trick to it that I don't think people.
Which I'm sorry to interrupt. He's also bringing that energy into The Boys right now as well.
He's doing that in The Boys. Any credit where credit is due. He's willing to not remove his helmet, and they do a couple smart things. You brought up Olivia Thirlby, who's also great in the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing too, is you need somebody it's important for a character to go through an arc in a movie. If it's trickier with a character like Dredd, because it's not a character built to grow that much. Mm-hmm. So by giving a character that is basically an audience surrogate, and for all intents and purposes, your main character, this is actually a trick. For Hellbent, I stole from this movie, because Nick is kind of like our hard ass assassin character, and I knew that he was going to grow just a little bit, because he's not the type of character that would have a big emotional epiphany. It's tiny steps. So it was important that. Jesse is our lead. Jesse is the one that goes through the big emotional journey, but Nick is Dredd. He grows, but just a little bit. And I think it's an important lesson that they should learn with a Wolverine when they bring him to MCU. Less is more with characters like this. It's a lesson I wish Star Wars had learned about Vader. The more we learn about Vader, the less interesting or scary he is. When we look at stuff with tough guy characters, I think, there's just a trick to it. I'm having trouble articulating, but there's this way that you have to convey that this is a person, but they have that tough exterior that's hard to get through. I think a good example of it right now is actually Master Chief in the Halo show. I think does a pretty good job. That's obviously a series. There's more room to take that character on a journey.
Cowboy characters often have that struggle as well.
Yeah, yes. and it's
Duttons.
if you play it too hard, it's almost a parody of itself.
Or cliche. It seems cliche. Very cliche. Yeah.
You get into like edgelord, gritted teeth kind of territory. If you play it too soft, there's nothing really unique about the character. Like, I think this is something that no offense to everybody, but I don't think this is something Mandalorian has quite cracked. That there's just Mando himself, because he's not I think he should be a little bit more hard-edged to be. Also, he should have a better character to bounce off of than a puppet.
Let's talk about one thing about Carl Urban that is great about this choice is that I always even thought way back in the day when he played Aramir in Lord
What's
of the
his
Rings.
Name?
Don't call me out for this fake name. Aomer. Aomer. Okay. He was really tough in that movie too. Yeah. Like, he came out,
and that character could have so easily come across as a complete dick.
Carl Urban, before he was Dredd, was my always my pick to play the new Batman.
I think a wasted casting choice, yeah, having never played Batman.
Yeah, like, yeah, again, like, well, immediately I was like, oh my God, this guy would be so amazing as Batman.
Agreed. For me, it was post-Dread, and when they were right before Ben Affleck, I was like, call Carl Urban up, because again, that balance between toughness and humanity. Some people are just born for it, but it can be tricky, and Carl Urban nailed it in Dread.
Yeah, Dread is an underrated classic too, so I'm glad that you brought it up.
Yeah.
All right, Jason, so impress us with your number two choice.
Well, my number two is the much lauded, of course, I had to give him a shout, is Christopher Reeve's Superman is my number two.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you something?
Yes.
He's my number one.
Ah, DJ, is he on your list?
He is not. I did not include him because I figured he'd show up on other lists.
That's why you're such a good guest.
My number one, we'll bring it up, is the second person. I was like, well, this is going to be on everybody's list.
Well, don't tell us who it is yet.
I won't.
Don't worry.
We'll do Jason number two and my number one together.
Yes. Christopher Reeve deserves to be on this list. I had a tough time. I think most people, when they know my love of Superman, they know of my love for Kansas, would be surprised that he's not my number one. But I actually think the number one choice to me was very clear from the very beginning. Mm. And Christopher Reeve, again, he's not the first person to ever play Superman, but he is the reason why this movie is iconic.
Yeah.
He embodies Superman perfectly. He is a truth, justice, the American way all the way through. He's very grounded. The tagline of Superman 1978 is, you will believe a man can fly, and it is Christopher Reeve that pulls us off. There is a very famous behind-the-scenes story where the first time you see Superman fly in this movie, where it is in the Fortress of Solitude, it's the first time you see Superman in the movie, and he flies towards the camera, that is the first shot that Christopher Reeve shot for the movie.
Wow.
It's the first shot that he ever played as Superman. And there's a story that Richard Donner tells that he says that this was the first shot they had ever filmed the flying. They built the rig, they'd done everything, and they were like, we don't know if this is going to work. This might look like the stupidest thing ever filmed if we don't pull this off. And apparently, Christopher Reeve had never been in the rig, had never tested it, and when he got in the rig and they shot it, they never choreographed anything out. They were just like, we're just going to pull you towards camera, fly it out. Now, Christopher Reeve is a classically trained actor. He's from Juilliard. Mm-hmm. And apparently it was his choice to do like a swimmer's bend, mm-hmm, as they got about halfway through the shot. And apparently Richard Donner says to this day, even though he's passed away, but in all the interviews I've ever seen,
he's still saying it. He's saying it. The Great Beyond.
He is saying it to Zeus himself in the afterlife. that was all. Bend is what sells that shot, and it's what sells that we believe that a man can fly. That was all Christopher Reeve. I mean,
we have a lot of classically trained actors on this list, yes, by the way. A lot of stage actors.
I mean, Christopher Reeve now has created such a break in superhero movies that, like, we still to this day, every actor that plays Superman is compared to Christopher Reeve.
Yep. Christopher Reeve set the standard for what it means to be a superhero on and off, yeah, the screen. Like,
yep,
you don't get to any of the other people that we're talking about without Christopher Reeve. He is the progenitor of everything that we love about, mm-hmm, this genre in this medium.
And yeah, I would say that right now, right as we are recording this, we have an actor that is now playing Superman in Tyler Hoechlin. I will say this, that I think is just as good as Christopher Reeve, but because Christopher Reeve has put such a indelible,
yeah,
stamp into our heads, into pop culture, into superhero fans, people will never let him go.
I think that's a good point. I think Christopher Reeve is so good that it's made making Superman adaptions harder because,
exactly,
he is so good.
Yeah. Exactly, because he's so good. And again, I think Tyler Hoechlin, and I know people are going to call me crazy, but like when you compare the performances side by side, like they're like, it's part of the reason is because like Superman the movie is just such, it's so solid just all around him.
Yeah.
And that also helps elevate him on the list. But like, man, Christopher Reeve is the reason why every actor that ever takes on any, I would even say Supergirls and stuff like, you know, any Superboys, any actor that considers a super role has to be like, I'm going to be immediately compared to Christopher Reeve. Yeah. Immediately.
And I think the other thing.
You go, Ashley. Sorry.
The other thing that you have to consider is that when you watch this by contemporary standards, this is going to be sacrosanct and people are going to drag me for it. he is the only person in Superman the movie who feels like a real person. Everybody else mm-hmm. feels much broader, yep. much more character-y, which was much more the style of acting at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he absolutely feels like a real person that you could see on the street.
And the shot, we have to talk about the shot that is gift on Twitter multiple times, where you see the shot of Clark.
Yes.
And he takes off his glasses and then he stands up and you're like, oh, wow, that is Superman.
He makes a great yep. case for how the Clark Kent yep. glasses thing could
You
work.
Would never buy that that guy was Superman.
No. That's, and that was what I was going to say is that yeah. I think the harder trick, other than selling that a man could fly, was selling that he could hide behind a pair of glasses and you wouldn't know it's the same guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's my number two. And Ashley, of course, we talked about before, he's your number one because
he's my number one.
We talked about you can't beat him.
I just don't think you can do better than that. I really don't. I think, I'm not saying anyone else's choices are invalid, but I think when you sort of look at the whole scope mm-hmm. of superhero actors, he always rises to the top.
For me. Yeah.
The list that I read where you put Ryan Reynolds at the top, you gotta know your history, my friend.
It's funny. When I talked about that this list was so difficult for me, this list was so difficult because I had a constant fight between my number one and my number two.
I'm excited yeah. to hear what your number one is.
Yeah. So Ashley, that was your number one.
That's my number one.
Anything else you'd like to say about the beautiful Christopher Reeve?
He is so beautiful.
By the way, college roommates with Robin Williams.
Wow. Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, yep. We got kids who listen to this, so I wouldn't. But can you imagine what those parties must have been? If you're a child, you'll know what it means when you're yep. older. Yep. All right. So I'll pass off to DJ to share his number one. DJ,
or no, his number two. Let me get your number two.
We got my number two.
Jason, so it's just number one.
So this is my number one. Also, just last thing on Christopher Reeve, I was bummed. What I found out, I looked it up, and he's actually younger. He was younger than Michael Keaton, and it was just like, I'm so bummed they never got to share the screen together.
Yeah, obviously, that would have been a cool Justice League.
Oh man.
With Linda Carter, like.
Yep, with Linda Carter.
They had such a waste. Anyway. Yep.
And I would even put it, even John Wesley Ship's The Flash.
Sure.
Do it. Yeah. So my number one is up there. So the two people I thought of was Christopher Reeve as Superman. This was the other one that I just thought that you can't. This has to be on somewhere on somebody's list, everybody's list probably. And it's also, to the Christopher Reeve point, somebody that did such a good job, it has made doing anything with this character after that more challenging. And it's Heath Ledger's Joker. Mm-hmm. And not only I remember seeing it for the first time and being completely, I remember the advertising campaign for the promotional campaign where it was just his laugh. And of course, the confusion when he was first announced, the people were like, Heath Ledger, what are you talking about? You know, and you see the movie and it's so electrifying. And of course, he continues the tradition of Jokers absolutely stealing their movies from the Batman in them. But it's one of those since then, you've had, that was everybody's Halloween costume for like 3 years. You've had every Joker since, from Gotham to now the Batman, or some variation of Heath Ledger's Joker. It's been memed to death. And then I can still go back and watch that movie today and just still be so enthralled by Heath Ledger's work in that movie.
There's a reason why it's an Oscar-winning performance.
Yeah, it's all that stuff, all the extraneous stuff that spun off of it just melts away. And it's like, yeah, this guy's still scary. Like, I don't know what he's going to do. The mystery around his motivations, you get the little hints. But he does another thing that I think is also incredibly tricky, is it's hard to play crazy. And mm-hmm. I think what Heath Ledger gets that a lot of other villainous actors don't necessarily understand is that Heath Ledger does not play Joker as if Joker's crazy. Joker doesn't know that he's crazy. To the point where there's literally a moment where a character calls him crazy and he stops them. He's like, I'm not crazy. He totally buys into what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He knows why he's doing it. And that makes him more terrifying because it's similar to another great villain performance in a very different tone, but like Homelander, where it's just like, I don't know what to do with this person. What do you do with this guy? And it just elevates that movie. It's made every Joker performance since, like, you're just going to be compared to that.
It also helps in the sense that, like, what happens a lot of times when great actors pass away, especially when their death is connected to a film.
Yeah, this is the Chadwick Boseman of it all as well.
It sort of elevates the film a little bit as well. Like you, and it is the Joker problem.
Because you mourn all the things you'll never see them do with that role or with that talent.
Well, it's like it's the Nirvana argument, right? Where it's like, oh man, they would have been as big as the Beatles if we had heard them through the 90s.
And I also think to that point, it also, there's no room to taint that performer. There's no, like, if he had been the villain in Rises and it wasn't as good as The Dark Knight, there is none of that. It's this, and it will always be this. There's no, like, 10 years later where he's a little tired, or he's like, you know, you get the actors that, you know, get older and bigger and start doing more drugs and their performances suffer. You know what I mean? The Marlon Brandos of the world, you know, there's none of that. There's just,
I don't know what you're talking about with that.
David S. Goyer had always talked about that the third movie initially was supposed to be the trial of the Joker.
Oh, and it should have been. And it should have been. And or the other thing I've thought about is if they'd leaned a little bit more into the Dark Knight Returns of it all. And I still want them to do this. Just skip ahead and imply, like, Batman's fought all these rogues. You didn't see them all, but they all exist and he fought them all. Because that's kind of the disappointment. I don't dislike Returns or Dark Knight Rises as much as a lot of people. But part of the disappointment there is Dark Knight sets up such an ideal Batman universe. You know what I mean? Joker even saying lines like, you need a better class of criminal, feels like set up to a whole Batman universe that we never got. To the point where I think there's some part of me that wants to try and imagine the Batman is actually a sequel to The Dark Knight. There's things that don't work. It doesn't work. But there's part of me that's like, yeah, I kind of wish this was just Dark Knight 3.
Interesting. Oh, well, that's a great choice.
We have two DCs, Jason. You got a Marvel at your number one?
I do. My number one, when I thought about it objectively, I thought about, this is the reason there's one actor who appeared in 9 films, and that is Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
Huge Jackman.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be forever tied with Wolverine simply because of the amount of time he has had with this.
Yep.
But he was not an A-list actor at all.
Kate Leopold was like his biggest thing before this.
And it was in a tiny movie that nobody thought would work, X-Men. And he got cast in this role. And
was he a replacement?
He was.
It was originally supposed to be Duggery Scott, who was the villain of Mission Impossible 2. But because Mission Impossible 2 was going late, he couldn't make this
film. I knew it was like a Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn kind of situation.
I mean, I think the universe benefited.
Now, I agree.
I like Duggery Scott, but Hugh Jackman is the reason why the X-Men movies work. It is the reason why it is just like we talked about with Joker, what we talked about with Superman. It is going to be nigh impossible to cast a Wolverine that can be Hugh Jackman in this role.
Apparently, Baby Schwarzenegger is campaigning for it.
Interesting.
Good luck.
He basically created the modern superhero actor role. He played this role over 17 years. He doesn't look like Wolverine in the comics, but he so embodies Wolverine that just like I talked about Chris Evans' performance with Captain America, he kind of made me understand Wolverine with his performance. Mm-hmm. I finally, for the first time, kind of saw Wolverine as more than one note after this performance. You're kind of like, oh, I understand this Ronin character now. And also the fact that we got up sort of like, look, continuity is a thing. I know the continuity, but continuity shouldn't be everything. Story is what matters more than continuity. And the fact that even though the X-Men continuity makes no damn sense, we sort of got to see a version sort of in an Elseworlds type sense, a version of his ending.
Yeah.
We got to see this character as young. We got to see this character as middle age. We got to see this character's death. And that is something that we don't get with a lot of actors and a lot of roles. And to me, again, when I thought about who has probably affected superhero movies more than any other actor, it has to be Hugh Jackman.
I almost put him on my list. Mm-hmm. And I will say that I do think he's been in a lot more bad movies than good movies Wolverine. However, his performance as Wolverine is always consistent. mm-hmm. and it's always good. And again, classically trained mm-hmm. stage actor.
I will agree with you on that, Ashley, because we can point out like X3, The Last Stand, which is universally, I would almost say, a disliked movie. He's good in it.
Yeah, he's good in the boringest Wolverine movie yeah. of all time, The Wolverine.
Yes. And like, yeah, he elevates. I mean, think about it. We talked about like every time the crowd cheers when Hayley Atwell yes. shows up. When he showed up for one line in X-Men First Class, the theater goes screams.
It was when, it was a good line, though. It was a good line. When
in, yes. The when, best line in the movie. The best line in the movie.
When X-Men Origins Wolverine. I saw this in Canada when Stryker says your country needs you and he says I'm Canadian, everyone screamed.
Yeah, I'm Canadian, bub. Yeah. And again, he is
Danny Houston, is that actually?
Yes, it's Danny Houston.
Couldn't pull it again, up, so sorry.
He is not what anybody, he does not look like the comic book Wolverine.
No.
He's not short.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even as gruff.
He's not even a square, yeah. yeah. Also another actor who everybody says is a really nice guy. Yep. Understands the assignment of being a superhero.
But no. It's the other problem. Like, he almost falls into the Crystal Reeve trap where he was so good at playing Wolverine that we have had a hard time seeing him as anything but Wolverine in yeah. every other role he does.
Yeah, but I think that's foolish because he's very good also not playing Wolverine.
I agree.
Like, in The Front Runner, excellent performance.
He's great in The Prestige, talking about Christopher Nolan.
Oh, The Prestige is so good. The Prestige is such a good movie.
He is, but like, people have a hard time not seeing him as Wolverine, even though he was in that great HBO movie, The Alice and Janney, I can't remember.
The one about the teacher.
Yeah, where he was the skeevy principal.
Yeah.
He was also one of the best parts of that, what was it called? Where they go in the sleep, the dream movie in the sleep tank.
Not Revelations, but it's something like
that. We've become so old people that we can't remember these movie titles, everybody.
Yep. Look, and nobody's allowed to Google Hugh Jackman's IMDb.
But anyways, Hugh Jackman is my number one. That I think there's no version of this podcast that he doesn't appear in this list.
Great.
So
great
there
choice.
You go. Everybody, I was surprised by our list. I thought we all had great choices.
Yeah, not as much crossover as I feared.
It's a fun, Ashley, our recommended reading, everybody, you can find at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading, also with some amazing blog posts written by Miss Ashley Victoria Robinson herself. We're going to find little snippets, little selections.
For each
of these, little touched on things. Don't forget, we also have some podcast goodness over at the Patreon, over at patreon.com/jawin, that's JAWIIN. We're going to be talking with DJ about some other underrated superhero movies. Movie performances, maybe some people that almost made it onto our list. And I also have a list from the Hollywood Reporter of the top 50 superhero performances of all time by their reckoning. And I thought we could go through it and compare it to ours.
That's great.
Whether we agree. So DJ will be there. Check it out. DJ also has a podcast that comes out every week, every Monday. DJ, please tell our listeners about your podcast.
Reminiscence. To call back to later.
No, that's not the only name of your podcast.
The podcast is only Stupid Answers. Both Jason and Ashley are regular guests. Love having them on. But very similar, very, very similar. We're sister podcasts talking about movies, TV shows, comic books, all that type of stuff. The most recent episode of this recording, as of this recording, is we talked about Lightyear. So you can find that everywhere podcasts are listened to.
Such a fascinating discussion into the astrophysics of how long an actual light year is. It was fascinating.
It was great. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. We had to get in that amount of detail, you know?
I didn't know it was that many AUs. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Okay. And real quick, your comic book again is on Kickstarter because again, it's awesome. Everybody should back it. What's the URL for that again, DJ?
HellbentComicBook.com. Also, if you follow me at DJ Talks Trash, I'm tweeting about it all the time. So check it out. Please, please just look up Hellbent on Kickstarter. Please.
Bad Education was the Hugh Jackman movie that I was trying to pull.
There you
go.
There you go. Everybody, you can follow Geek History Lesson all around social medias. Where can they do that, Ashley?
You can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, on Twitter at GHL Podcast, or on our new Instagram at Geek History Lesson.
You can follow Ashley on Instagram and Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. Follow myself on Instagram and Twitter at Jawin. That's JAWIIN. And now for hashtag stick around, where we made sure you stuck through all the plugs. You know, superhero casting has some very weird choices, too. And so I would love to hear what, not bad, but just strange. Like some, are there any?
Michael Keaton Batman makes no sense to me.
Okay,
whatsoever. He's a great actor, but like, no, he's not Batman for me.
Going to that same sort of time period,
comedian.
This movie was
Mr. Mom.
Yeah, this movie wasn't even made. But I've never understood Nicolas Cage as Superman when that was going to happen in that Tim Burton movie. And I know a lot of people have always said
Schnapp didn't convince you, huh?
No, he didn't. I like Nick Cage as an actor, he's not Superman to me. Yeah. I actually think he's excellent in Kick-Ass as a superhero, as Big Daddy. He is so good in that movie. But he's not Superman to me.
Well, I do. The part that kind of convinced me is when they talk about, speaking of Death of Superman Lives, when they talk about like the fact that he's always kind of like twitchy because he's hearing stuff across the planet. I'm like, that's at least interesting. Like, I don't know. Sure. You know,
I'm one of the few that I'm like, I'm glad that movie didn't happen. But DJ, anybody, just a weird choice for a superhero movie?
Weird choices. Oh, man. Oh.
Just odd. Usually like, that's weird.
That's a weird, I'm trying to think. Now I'm going through the whole lexicon of every superhero movie ever made.
Can I throw another one out?
Yeah, please.
Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze is such a weird choice for that movie.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah. That's definitely from like a
It doesn't even fit that franchise. Like Tommy Lee Jones is Two-Face and Jim Carrey is the Riddler. Like, you're like, okay, cool. Danny DeVito, all of them kind of fit. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger just like, what? Uma Thurman even fits when you think about the 90s and you think about that franchise, but Arnold Schwarzenegger like sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go just because it just off the top of my head, I'm trying to think of one. I think of one that maybe is a little odd, is very, very good, talented actor that I like in things, but I think is miscast as I'd have to say Oscar Isaac as Moon Knight. I think he's a very talented actor. I like him on a lot of things. He's one of my favorite actors. I just don't think he's right for that role. Not necessarily odd, because I do understand why you'd want to cast one of the biggest stars in the world as your guy. Like, I get that. I just don't know that off the top of my head, if I had to pick one, I don't know that he's a good fit.
Interesting. All right. Well, good choice. DJ, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. It was a pleasure having you, as always.
Thank you.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason, still wearing spandex Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
The list is over. Class dismissed.